This week, I'm talking to Lisa Lambert. She is the principal of Rule Number 6, hailing from Vancouver, Canada. She is a Seth Godin's Alt MBA coach. She's an amazing facilitator. I work with her on the Global Virtual Design Sprint, and I had the pleasure of talking with her this week on the Dallas Design Sprints podcast. Let's get into a little bit about who you are. Currently, you are doing consulting on helping organizations with human-centered approaches and methodologies, like the design sprint, to basically reduce risk, cut out the busy work, build capacity. But I know that you have a real interest in process and how people work. Can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit and give me an idea of the origins of that and where you eventually want to take things?
Yeah, I think what I ended up doing, or what I'm doing now, came a lot from my own experience in the workplace. And I was kind of more in, for my own business, had more traditional working in business, but always in the science and tech sector, which I think is a pretty interesting space because it's multidisciplinary by nature. It's very international, and it's always working at the frontiers because we're trying to build what's new, whether that's ideas or that's equipment or experiments or different things that way. And a lot of the focus in that too is very much about the process or the technology or the tools of the trade. But the thing is, people do that work. And when you can bring people into that work, into those elements, things go a lot better. It goes a lot faster. People can have ownership of a project. They can have their voice heard. So I've got to see that in some different spaces as well. And I think a big part of my roles over the years was always to build things, whether it was building teams, building special projects, different issues, building up partnerships. And whenever I put people first and kept that focus in there, you can bring in kind of whatever process or tools and end up light years ahead of where you were there. And I saw this trend happening kind of over and over again in different spaces. And I also thought about kind of where are my skills and where can I help in this? And a lot of it is really, it's to help people do the work and help kind of guide them through this space. And it was one that I learning different processes like design sprint, some other ones. It was a chance to say, like, where can I take this elsewhere and get outside my little bubble of science and tech that I'm in and work with some more organizations in that space and some broader ones as well and learn from them and help them show up and be their best selves.
Did you see the design sprint as a way of accomplishing that or being the driver of producing that change or influencing that change?
I think mix of both. I think the design sprint is really, really interesting because it gives you a process, it gives you a recipe, and you can move the ingredients around as you need to. But it helps you create a space, whether that's a physical space or a virtual space, for people to come in and they can ditch status. It doesn't really matter if you're the CEO or if you're a junior person. It doesn't matter if you're young or you're old, what your role, if you're sales and marketing, that might happen to be the loudest. It doesn't matter in that because it gives you a structure to go through and work together, truly not just play collaboration, but truly collaborate as people to move something forward and where you fall in love with the problem, not the own your own individual solution that you're bringing to it.
Now, when we had a conversation earlier, you were talking about your work to date with human-centered design, and you have an interest in kind of transitioning to something a little bit larger or expanding the scale to society or org-centric design. Talk to me a little bit about that. Where do you see yourself going with it?
I think I'm still figuring it out, but an area that I'm really fascinated with is I'm really delighted to see that human-centered design is becoming more commonplace in organizations and businesses. I think it's only part of the puzzle, though. I think you start with humans, but a lot of our whatever we're building, we're working on, whether it's a process or a service, or a product, is going into society, it's going into that bigger scale. So how do you sit there and make that connection and that foresight to think first, second, third order consequences when where you bring something to the masses? Because empathy is a little bit different when you're looking at a million people or a billion people in those situations. So what are the links in between that?
So do you find yourself drawn to something like ethnography as an example? Do you find there's a parallel there?
I think there might be. It's a new idea for me to put it in that framework of thinking ethnography, but I think that would play into it a fair bit in trying to understand something in that scale.
One of the things that I find that you do extremely well, probably in the top five that I know of today, is facilitation, or literally taking a group of people, strangers, whoever they may be, and getting them together in a workshop environment or something similar, and aligning them around what needs to be done, and getting them to kind of forget themselves for a little while and immerse themselves in the process. I've had the pleasure of seeing you do a brand sprint where you brought a bunch of professionals from three different continents, I believe, to work on the referral network. You were also part of the Global Virtual Design Sprint, being the lead facilitator there and leading the charge with a group of people. What draws you to facilitation, and why do you think, from your perspective, you're so gifted at it?
Thank you, first of all. It's really humbling to hear. And it's nice to hear that's the impression that's your experience in working with me, because it's, I think my role is to help other people just want to have a really, work should be fun. Like, I don't know where we look at work as a struggle or I have to work. I think I get to work as a privilege, and work should be a place that we get to enjoy and get to explore ideas and have fun. So I know part of it's that philosophy that I bring in to what I do, and try and create those spaces right from the get-go when people come in. There's magic when you can co-create something with someone else, and you can do something that's bigger than yourself, and almost this improv mentality of yes and creating an avenue right from the get-go that this is where we're gonna start with a yes and not from a place of judgment, and just have almost a playground to explore possibilities. And I think that's something as a facilitator that you make that playground, whether it's virtual or it's in real life. And I think for a lot of people, that's a change of pace from their day to day. So if you can get that people feeling that right away, that, hey, we're going to have some fun here and we're going to explore possibilities, and there's no right answers because there can't really be, people can choose to show up differently. And they generally, they're yearning. They want to be a part of that, is what I've seen in my work.
One of the things that's characteristic of your facilitation is that living in the moment kind of feeling. The fact that you're introducing a sense of play, a sense of purpose about why people are there, but being able to do those characteristic icebreakers you do, where someone has to, we all have to impersonate the Get Smart character with a shoe phone, and finding someone in the room, something in the room to basically put up to our heads. That, and taking the screenshots, I think, is something that is, I wouldn't say a calling card, but it's an example of how you can motivate just a bunch of different people that have never worked with each other before, and kind of get them around a common theme, and thinking that this is time well spent. And so that kind of leads me into my next question about rule number six. Why didn't you call it rule number five? Or rule number four? I'm wondering if rule number six, when you were looking at a top 10 list of rules, spoke to you most, but you'll have to tell me the origin of that.
I'll have to give you the link to a little video, but it's stolen like an artist on this one. So there's a wonderful, wonderful book called The Art of Possibility by Rosamund and Benjamin Zander. If you get to listen to it as an audiobook, please do, because Ben Zander is a composer and a conductor. And so there's beautiful music in the book if you get to listen to it. But rule number six is a story that is told in the book. And I'll give you the link to the story, but in short, it means don't take yourself so goddamn seriously. And there are no other rules. There's only rule number six. The story behind it is wonderful. It's just a minute long and I'll share it. But that was a really good reminder with me, with my work before. So when I was kind of in a regular organization, it was really serious all the time. And there wasn't an element of lightness or play. We just had to grind it out. And even that word grind or hustle, those are tough places when you're under that pressure cooker to, I think, be really creative or to want to explore different opportunities even because you've got those blinders on to just want to focus. And that was something I noticed, like when I could get into flow or in the zone is when there was a little bit more lightness or play, or it didn't feel like I was an emergency room physician, even though those weren't the problems that I was dealing with. But it felt the sense of like, this is do or die. So I was thinking a little bit, where am I at my best self when I'm doing my work? And it's when it's fun. So why can't work be fun all the time? So that was something when I created my studio, that was the key element behind it. And that's my reminder all the time that, you know, don't take yourself so seriously and have some fun with it.
Think of an environment or a situation where you feel you would perform at your best. Give me that scenario and what that looks like.
I feel really selfish because I get it a lot. I think facilitating, and I think you might be able to relate to this too, but facilitating is a great space because I get to work with all these super smart people that are way smarter than me. And they're coming at this from a place where they're really generous. And we all get to get stretched in different directions, come in there and be open and receptive to what's coming. And I get to learn so much, and learning from people just from what their professional background might be, but their personal background or their cultural background, and seeing that come together. And then we just get to make really cool stuff.
Do you find that you're better with smaller groups or larger groups of people?
Probably kind of a mid-size. So funny enough, I'm a real introvert and I'm really shy, but I think part of it too depends on the space that you can create for that. And I think that's part of where facilitation has been really great, because it's kind of had me act as if and forced me to kind of come out and be that one who shows up and is confident and is that connector between people. And that's been really great. And so the scale of that, I think I like a room, whether it's a virtual or an in-person room, where there's an opportunity where you can have a human-to-human connection with everyone. If you get too big, then you lose some of the personal elements of that.
We're talking 2020, same time next year. Where do you see yourself?
Well, so the office will probably be blue, like a pretty dark, bright blue, okay. Which will be a nice change to see in some art and just some other spaces. You can't see in front of me. There's a whole bunch of post-its on the wall, and that's kind of my doodle place in that. But yeah, getting rid of the clinical look would be one change for sure. And I think in a year from now, it's more experiments. So I think a lot of what I'm doing facilitating is, whether it's using Design Sprint or other methodologies, I've never just taken the book or taken that recipe and run with it. It's always looking at mixing different ideas together and trying to figure out, okay, we're trying to solve this problem. What tools or processes do we need along the way, and try and experiment and play there. So I'd love to have a space of more experimentation in that, and trying to bring different methodologies together and seeing what's possible in that. And I'd love to do some more. Most of my work is remote. I do some work in person, but a lot of it is remote. And I'd love to play with what some different possibilities are in that space a bit more. And there's still some hang-ups, and you deal in remote space all the time. People still have hang-ups about, can remote work? Can we do this? Is this possible? And for me, my experience with remote has been sometimes it's actually better than in person. It gives you access to a different kind of space or different tools, and being able to prove that assumption or that hypothesis out a little bit more with some different projects. And hearing that feedback back from other people, that they discover new possibilities because we did something remotely.
Do you feel that remote work is more aligned with introverts than extroverts, or do you think it doesn't matter and it's really the technology that enables people to communicate in a different manner?
I think what I really like about remote is I think it's actually more inclusive for most people, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. Part of that is the technology, part of that's the process, and then part of that is how you kind of guide through that process. But just to give an example, a tool I really like is Zoom, a bit more than other ones, because I think it's really interesting when you go on Zoom, even if you have lots of people, everybody takes up the same amount of physical space. And it's different with just how you can come in there. So whether I'm someone who's 4'10" or I'm 7'3", it doesn't matter, because we're all sharing that equal amount of space when we're working over a technology like Zoom, versus being in the room where that can impact the dynamic.
Lisa, if you were 7'3", that would be the perfect icebreaker for one of your facilitation sessions. Or maybe even 4'10". Just the extremes on either both sides of the equation with in terms of height, it would be interesting.
But it's... it's something that, but it's interesting. Like I've met people afterwards who've worked on Zoom and I didn't realize that, that's you physically, because there's a bit more of sharing an equal space, and we're kind of, as we're building this playground together, we all just have an equal part of it that we're putting into it. So I think that's fun. Or even just the space for icebreakers as well. It's a little bit different with virtual, because you can bring elements in from a physical world into it and create that space. And I think there's ways that you can cater to different people, and whether it's introvert, extrovert, or whatever you might be looking at, you can bring that into digital. I think it takes a little bit more planning in advance, but I also think there's more of an awareness for it as well.
Give me the names of three people that you've worked with in your time as a principal of rule number six that impacted the way you approach your work. And you can't use me as an example because that's too easy, because we're talking and we've done a lot of work together. But I'm wondering, in your circle and in your experience, give me three people that you feel were somebody that they were just really interesting to work with.
I'll pick someone first that we both worked with, and Jason Rood. I think I'd love working, any chance I would have a chance to work with Jason, and put my hand up and I will work with him. He is brilliant, for one, and he never tries to overshadow anyone or something. He'll first be like, let's give a space for other people to come forward and shine. And he'll even help pull ideas out of people that might be holding something back a little bit. And his dedication, his commitment, he's so skilled across so many different things, whether as a facilitator, as a designer, as someone who can think about strategy, and he can synthesize all these things together in a way that's really generative for the people that he's
so easygoing. I mean, we're working with him, and especially just with the time that I had in the last session we had with the brand, just seemed really easygoing. No friction. Even if he had a disagreement, he would voice it in a way that was more about the collective and really being constructive. Yeah, I'm right there with you about him.
And about the disagreement, I worked with him on a project. I won't mention the project to the other team involved, but where he did disagree with the direction that the group took in and the way that he went about it, but he supported the group nonetheless in that. And the way that he went about that, I thought, was so professional, so human, and with this viewpoint of, okay, well, here's the greater good with this here, even though I would prefer to do it another way, I'm going to go with where the group's going on this. And I just had so much respect in that moment for how he went about it, that and every time I work with him, I learn so much. So if anyone ever has a chance to work with Jason, please do. He's a rare talent in the world. So that would be one for sure. I'm going to pick someone. So I also involved with Alt MBA, which is a leadership and management program. And I work as a coach in that. And I was just on a call this morning, actually, with one of the head coaches. His name is Dean Barduca. And he's in the design space as well. He's got a great company called Element 5. And he's also doing some pretty interesting work with facilitation. And not design sprint wise, but looking at a lot of social justice issues. And Dean just has a way about him that when he comes into a room, he just invites everyone into the party, and especially when it's a really challenging topic, and to try and bring people to their edges of trying to challenge some of their own assumptions and their beliefs. And he does it in a way that when we're talking about really uncomfortable things, he can make it really comfortable. And I love working, any chance I get to work with Dean on something or just have a conversation with Dean, it's a gift on that one. And I'm really excited about the work he's doing and where he's going with that too.
Let's make sure we include their LinkedIn profiles and any kind of related websites, so that in your show notes, we do feature not only where to contact you, but also these particular individuals too.
That sounds, they should be highlighted because they're amazing on that one. Another person I want to highlight, and I can't mention their name, unfortunately, but there's some confidentiality around the project, but I'm working with...
I thought you were going to say like President Obama, or maybe like a well-known political figure or something like that.
No, this is, I mean, this person might in some way, but there's a data scientist that I am working with on a project, and he's amazing. He's the chief data scientist with his organization. I think he's 27 years old. He's just brilliant, but he's someone too that'll never say, well, that's not my job. He will go in there and support everybody and what they're doing and their team. And the way that he thinks about solutions or ideas, I just want to be in his mind. It's just amazing. But he can go from like super, super technical to articulating things for everybody else and bringing them into the way he shares and talks about his work. There's no ivory tower about it. He's inviting people into his work in the way that he's able to articulate it so clearly. And I'm really excited to see where he's going to, because he's got his ideas with the project he's working on now, but also for what else I know he's going to make that I think is going to have a really positive impact on society. And he's someone who I really just the way that he is, the way that he works on his own, but as part of a team, and his vision to build a better future. I really admire what he's doing.
What kinds of things are you looking forward to between now and the end of the year? What projects, collaborations, what are you planning on doing?
A few things that I'm really excited about. So I just am kind of diving into it. It's still really early stages, but my background being in science and tech, that's always kind of what my love is. But trying to look at a project that can tell the story of science in a better way. So I think right now when we think about science or tech even, we tend to think about a white man in a white lab coat in some kind of lab in a chemistry set, or tech is really, you know, lots of chrome and fancy things, or we just think about it as a widget or product. But it's, again, it's coming back to the people side, that it's people that do science, it's people that build tech. And what does those elements look like? So we're looking at some of the storytelling around that, but trying to create something that would be a shared resource out there that would actually capture science and tech for what it really is and what the people really are, and trying to show a bit of those role models in more of an authentic, more of a genuine way in that space. So that's a project I'm really, really excited about.
And how are you going to share that with the world? What's the end product for that?
We're looking at some of the elements for that right now, but I think it'll be a collection of a lot of visuals behind that. So I think there's a lot of power in images, whether that's moving images with video or in stills. So I think that'll be a big part of it. There's going to be a digital entity to it as well, and some story elements that come from that. So we're still shaping out kind of what the bit is, and I think that's going to, as other people get involved as well, we'd love for them to be able to shape that work too.
Do you have any vacations or excursions planned towards the end of the year during the holidays?
We haven't planned it yet. So we're going to Mexico next year for a friend's wedding, and we scuba dive as well. So we'll do some scuba diving over there. So that's going to be in April.
I remember that. I remember that about your profiles, that you definitely love to scuba dive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the coolest places on earth to go, is to sit there and be able to breathe underwater and just be an observer of just all the amazing stuff that's happening down there and just incredible creatures.
Cool. So if people wanted to get on the web and find out what you were doing and keep track of it, whether it's the project you talked about or otherwise, where are some of the best places to go for that?
My website would be one. So rulenumber6.ca, and that's all spelled out. Another place would be just to find me on LinkedIn or send me a note. So it's just hello@rulenumber6.ca are probably some of the best places. I've got a couple ebooks coming out in the next little bit as well. One's going to be on collaboration and some methodology for collaboration, some ways to actually kind of bring everybody into that. So we were talking about introverts, extroverts. So what are some processes, some tools that you can use in that space that put the people, take care of the people in collaboration and help it really truly be a collaboration. So that's one. And another one, looking at some of the icebreakers and things that we've been talking about. So what are some little tools or techniques or approaches you can take to bring people into problem solving collectively right from the get-go to set the stage for what's to come?
And when are those going to be released? Are you currently working on those now and planning on releasing them towards the end of the year? Or what's your schedule?
The collaboration one is written. It just needs some bit of editing and some design work on that one. So that one should be out within the next month, and the other one before the end of the year.
Hmm. So. Interesting. So that sort of ebook would be perfect for someone like me who's doing this thing called the Global Virtual Design Sprint and would want to educate others on rule number six's particular way of going about facilitation, no?
It would be helpful. I hope it would be helpful. I'd love to get the feedback on it too. So I'm hoping actually, so for October, when we do a session in October, I'm thinking that we do one about some of the ice, but like getting started, that first 5 minutes of the design sprint, why that's so crucial in setting the stage for where you're going and what are some tools and techniques to bring into that.
Are you planning on doing any kind of video or written word or something to support and market those ebooks?
Yeah, that's coming in there, and kind of any help or insights on that one too. But yeah, I know looking at putting that out there with some written stuff and maybe a video as well, because I think a lot of these to show them in action is really powerful on that side.
Lisa Lambert, it was wonderful talking to you. Hopefully we're going to talk again, and best of luck with your ebooks and your upcoming projects.
Thank you. We'll chat soon.
Thank you very much for listening to the Dallas Design Sprints podcast. If you have a question or a comment, please email me at robert@dallasdesignsprints.com. You can also find me on the web on Pinterest, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Reddit, TikTok. I think I've named all of them. But you can get a hold of me and let's have a conversation. Okay? Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time.